So I'm going to go with that wasn't really Vladimir Putin. No Russian accent, sounded local, don't know. Anyway, I'm Fran Storch. Hi, you're listening to Radio Naturopath here at the University of Connecticut on, what's today, September 21st, 2016. And I hope you enjoyed your summer because you got less than a day left of it. Actually, that's not true. You got the actual equinox is going to occur in the 10 o'clock hour tomorrow. So it's summer until then. So enjoy it. However, I just heard a weather forecaster today tell me that 2016 was the warmest year on record. So if you don't believe in climate change, you probably should. Interesting. So it's the warmest year on record all year. One thing that I happen to notice is, now I got two things going on because I have menopause, so I'm warmer this year than I was last year, but so is the world, which is interesting. I noticed that I wore more tank tops this year. I wore more sleeveless tops, and I bought more sleeveless tops, and I wore them more often than I did probably any other year. And I'm also finding that I'm tolerating cooler temperatures better, which is something that happens when you're 52. So what can I say? And I actually don't mind it. If I wind up being more cold tolerant, I don't mind because I'm still pretty heat tolerant because of my fitness. So if that continues, that's okay. All right. So we got a lot of nice topics to talk about. Ron is in Las Vegas right now at Interbike. And so we'll be talking with him during the next hour during Bicycle Talk. So if you're listening by podcast, you can listen to today's Bicycle Talk and you can hear Ron broadcasting live from Interbike, which will be very exciting. So he's not here to co-host me, so I'm flying solo. So I would recommend not using the telephone to contact me. If you have a question, we would love for you to contact us, however, and what you can do is text me. Text me at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also write me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. And I've got radionaturopath@gmail.com right in front of me. So if you got a question, I will be happy to answer it for you. So let's see. What would we like to talk about today until you ask me your question? One of the first things that was interesting to me is the stuff about fitness trackers. So I got two things. One is that there was a study that came out that showed that a few years back they did a study on a fitness tracker that no longer people don't use anymore. It had a bulky arm attachment instead of having one of those handy wristbands or being part of your phone. And they found that the fitness track people who use this fitness tracker didn't lose as much weight as people who didn't use it, and they were doing basically the same stuff. So what's the deal there? Why would a fitness tracker make you less likely to lose weight? And it may have had to do. They had different reasons. One of the reasons is they think that using the fitness tracker gives you a false sense of security, and that you're logging things in a way that you maybe shouldn't be, or that you're lying to the tracker because you're letting the tracker worry about it, so you're not being as mindful about what you're actually doing. And when people see that they haven't done nearly as many steps in a given day as they might have, then they kind of give up and they say, well, there's no chance for me to make up my 10,000 steps or whatever my goal was today. So they just kind of give up. So that was one of the things that was interesting. And then I happened to catch the Today Show today, and Jeff Rossum, who does some cool reports, did this really cool thing. What he did is he compared fitness. He did this. Oh, my God. It's so cool what he did. So what he did was he wore three different brands of fitness tracker that had wristbands on his hand. And he walked around 30 Rock for like an hour to see if they tracked the same number of steps. And guess what? I mean, it's not news if it was all perfect, right? So no. All right. So after walking around for a certain amount of time with these three trackers on his wrist, one of the fitness trackers measured something like their fitness numbers were something like 50 to 100 steps off the three different ones. He varied the steps by a number of minutes. Three counts were off by, like I said, hundreds of steps that they varied. Like one of them was over 600 steps and one of them was in the low 500s. And this is the same three devices worn on the same wrist for the exact amount of time. So There must be noise in how you track steps. I'm assuming that that's the case. And then what he did, this is the coolest part. He went to the performance lab at New York's Hospital for Special Surgery. This is the money. Still wearing the three fitness trackers on one wrist, he walked 500 steps. And how he knows he walked 500 steps is he had two producers, associates, sit with him, watch him on a treadmill and physically count his steps. So he could compare, and they physically counted his that he did 500 steps. When he stopped at 500, and then he read what the tracker said. One of the devices came out the closest and said 502 steps. It actually counted two more steps. The two other trackers, one said 520 and one said 559. So that's really interesting. So just so you know, your fitness tracker is probably not perfectly accurate. And I don't know if that amount of noise makes a difference because the difference between the most accurate one and the least was 60 steps. And I know in the fitness trackers that I use, that's not that many calories. And so it doesn't matter that much. I still think that if you use any tracker at all, it's still going to help you and it might motivate you. So if you know you have a goal of taking 10,000 steps a day and you have a tracker, that tracker is going to help you to do that. And if it helps you to get more exercise, I still think it's a good thing. In terms of tracking it and tracking the calorie burn, there were differences in the calorie burn. So he actually had a mask on, and they measured his oxygen or his carbon dioxide output to get a very accurate measurement about how many calories he burned. So the hospital's technology measured how many calories he'd burned during the 500 steps. None of the three devices was even close to that count. One said he'd burned nearly quadruple that number. So when you have a pedometer, whether you have an app or you have a device, it's probably not going to calculate your calories exactly correctly. But it gives you an idea. If you want to calculate your calories more accurately, you really can't use a fitness device. You have to use a heart rate monitor with a chest strap. And that's going to be a lot more accurate. Because I noticed, because I use a particular app, and I have a chest strap that hooks up to that app, and I noticed that what it reports for me for calories is a lot lower than, say, if I just use a particular app and it has the calorie burn saved. So, for example, if I use Strava will give you a calorie burn, and which it will hook up with another fitness app. Say, for example, my Fitness Pal. It's very convenient because you do your Strava activity and then it'll dump your Strava calories directly. You can set it up so that it transfers the calories directly into your Fitness Pal. So you have an idea of how many extra calories you burned that day. And I don't have Strava Premium, so I don't have a heart rate monitor hooked up to it. So it's not accurate. And it tends to tell me a lot more calories than when I use my app that's directly hooked into the heart rate monitor strap. So I tend to trust those more directly, and it still means you should watch what you eat. You know, you use the fitness devices and the trackers as a guide, but you don't rely on them 100%. You still have to track them. You have to work on them with you have to live your life as well and honor how you feel, what your hunger is like, and be smart about what you're actually eating. And, you know, there's certain tricks that you can use to help you eat more healthfully, and you should still do those even if you are tracking. Now, in terms of tracking your food has been studied, and when you actually track what you eat, people who track do better than people who don't. That's been studied. So this is not necessarily tracking your fitness, people are doing certain workouts, and because they're doing those certain workouts, they think they can eat a lot more calories. And I think that when you wear those all-day ones, like the Fitbit, the Jawbone Up, and the Garmin, when you wear those guys all day, they may overestimate. Well, we know they overestimate your calorie burn. But when you do individual workouts and you set yourself at a baseline level of calories, and then you have that work, just the workout that you add to that, that has been working for me. I mean, that's been working to keep my weight down. And it has only worked to keep my weight down to a certain extent. If I eat too much sweets, I will gain weight. And, you know, I'll sit at a little bit higher weight than I would if I didn't do that. And the other thing I got going on is the menopause. The menopause makes you gain weight. I mean, it doesn't make everybody gain weight, but it makes most people gain weight. And the magic number is 10 pounds. Some people gain a lot more if they're not watching what they're eating. But if you, so many women say, I haven't changed anything. I'm doing the same exercise and I haven't changed the way I eat and I gained 10 pounds. And that's what happened to me. And I heard that. And from other women, and then now it's the first year of menopause, and guess what? There it is. And it's 10 pounds, and what the woman will do is they'll say, and it's all right here. Did you hear that? That thwunk was my hand hitting my abdomen. That's what happens. So if that happened to you, no worries. Susan Weed, the herbalist, says, don't do anything about it. Just keep eating healthy and don't try to lose weight, because during menopause is not the time to lose weight because you need that extra weight. And the reason you need the extra weight is it will make you extra estrogen. If you try too hard to lose that weight, you will not have as much estrogen. You'll have more hot flashes and you won't feel good. And all the other things you need estrogen for, like having comfortable sex and having vaginal moisture and having nice skin and keeping your blood sugar regular and having good muscle mass and recovering from exercise and all the other things that estrogen does, keeping your eyes moist. You know, women, we get dry eyes. Oy, it's a thing, this menopause, my goodness. So anyway, what should you do about the tracker? I still say use them. I think they're neat. I'm techie. If you are a Luddite, it's okay. You don't have to use them. But studies show that using the tracker to track your food does work. That is helpful. Why? Because it's a mindfulness tool. It makes it so that you don't eat indiscriminately. Other, you know, tricks to use. If you use the fitness tracker and you use the food tracker in concert with other good ideas, which is mostly eat protein and produce, and whatever your protein and produce looks like is going to be different from mine and different from the other guy or gals, right? And so you eat mostly protein and produce. You have foods that are higher in calories but are still good for you, so you limit how much you eat, like nuts and seeds. You don't want to overdo nuts and seeds. You don't want to overdo dairy. And then you certainly don't want to overdo grains. And then you have your foods that are play foods. And if you are able to eat those and still be happy and healthy, there are ways to do that that can be helpful. So some of the tricks are, first of all, you eat mostly protein and produce, and that's what you focus on. And whenever possible, that's what you eat. If you go to the restaurant, try to eat mostly protein and produce and have a few bites of that thing that you just absolutely can't resist. But don't have a whole meal of that, except for once in a while. You know, mostly protein and produce, have dairy as a garnish, have grains, depending on how much activity you're getting and how much how your metabolism is, anywhere from 5 to 15 bites of grain and starchy products at a meal. And that way you get to have some and you get to have what you like. And the other trick is to have those starchy foods at the end of a meal. Eat your fill of protein and produce and then have your carbohydrate foods and even your dessert after that. That's why you have dessert after your meal. First of all, you're not going to be as hungry for dessert, so you're not going to be as likely to eat as much. And second of all, you've already got a blunted blood sugar spike because you ate protein, fiber, and fat earlier in your meal. So your insulin is not going to rise as much from whatever starch or sugar that you put into that meal. So those are good ways to do it. I still think that the trackers are useful. I certainly think they're useful if you're training. But there are, just be aware that they're not perfect. If they help you and they have helped you to lose weight, more power to you. And I agree. I enjoy using them. I'm a geek. I like having the numbers. I like seeing the numbers. I find having the numbers motivating. Not everybody feels that way. But if you do and it works for you, that's good. But really what has been shown to work, and this has been studied, is tracking your food. So whatever method of tracking your food you like to use, it doesn't matter what kind. It's the kind of tracking you do is the kind you enjoy doing. And so there's several ways to do it. One is to track by writing on paper. One is to track by simply typing into a computer. You can use a Word file or a Google Docs file, whatever any kind of a notepad or anything that you want to do on a computer or on your phone even. Or you can use an app. And apps usually are on both the computer. So if you don't have a smartphone, but you want to use a so-called app, they usually have a web-based version of it. So if you use MyFitnessPal, for example, or Lose It, or the Fitbit app, or whatever you want to use, you can type on the computer and you can use it on your phone, and they sync between the two. And if you don't have a smartphone, you can just do it on your computer. And so you just sit at your computer. And the cool thing about the apps, everybody's like, oh, it's going to take too much time to use the app. Well, the cool thing about the apps is the apps are smart. By smart, I mean they remember what you ate. So if you click on a meal, it will have a list of all the things you ate recently, and you just check boxes. So the more you use the app, the smarter it becomes, because it remembers everything you ate, and then you wind up just checking boxes. And you can adjust portions, and you can adjust amounts. And if it's a food that you haven't eaten yet, it's probably somebody else ate it. It's in the database. And if it's not in the database, you have it's shareware, so you can enter it. And it asks you if you want to let the world use the information you entered. And if you're nice, you say, of course you can. So that you enter a food. If you're really geeky like me, you'll take the food and you'll look at the ingredients on it, and you'll enter, you know, all the calories, the carbs, the fat, the protein, the calcium, the iron, all that stuff. There's a place for you to enter all that stuff. And you just add it to the database, and that's really cool. And then the other thing that you can do is if the food is a processed or packaged food, I should say, and it has a barcode, scanner in it, and it will scan the food into the app. So that's really cool. And a lot of those apps have that functionality. So they're really useful and they're really helpful, and it keeps you on track, and it makes it so that if you see you're approaching your calorie goal for the day, your fat goal, your protein goal, whatever your goal is that you've set, you slow down and you stop, or you think twice about eating that extra donut or whatever it is you're thinking about eating. You know, I went to the Big E on Monday, and that was pretty funny. So the Big E is really interesting because there is no end of food to eat there. My goodness. You can get maple everything, especially if you go into the houses where the different states are. And apparently, I think they do maple syrup in every state. So there was maple syrup stuff. You would think it was all in Vermont, and there was plenty of maple syrup items in Vermont, but they were in New Hampshire, and all of the states had it. And so one of my favorite treats there, I had a small sample size of maple soft serve. That was good. Holy crow. So I had just a little tiny taste of it. I mean, maybe less than a quarter of a cup, but boy, was that good. And of course, you get maple fudge there, and I got a little fudge. They had chocolate maple fudge. They had pumpkin fudge, so I tried some of that. And different states had had fudge stands, and I'm a fudge aficionado. And you know, I don't eat a ton of fudge. I can't sit and eat a whole box of fudge. I have a few bites of fudge after dinner at night, and that's it. And, you know, and it lasts me a few nights anyway. And then, of course, I exercise a lot. So they had that. They had maple cotton candy. That was really exciting. They had French fries covered in cheese and bacon. I did not have that. I did have the big potato. So there was a place where you could get this enormous potato, and it was a Connecticut potato. It's an enormous potato. It's fully loaded. It has sour cream, butter, cheese, bacon bits. And it was quite good, and I could not finish it. It was just so big and so heavy. So I was good for half of it, and I was with a friend, and so I wrapped it in two things of aluminum foil and then put it in a plastic bag, and I carried it home. I don't know if I'll finish it, though. It was really heavy, and I must say it was quite good. And then we had some gelato, but they had, so I didn't eat a huge amount of food. And then the thing is, once I ate that potato, that took away my appetite, because it was a lot of carbs and it was a lot of fat, and I had only half of it, and I was like, all right. I thought I would get an iced coffee or something. I had no appetite for it. And you know, we had to walk around for a long time before I was even interested in the gelato. They had there's a whoopie pie stand in one of the states, may have been Maine. And my goodness, every kind of whoopie pie you can imagine. Unfortunately, they had no gluten-free ones, so that was out. And no, I didn't cheat, because it's not worth it to me. I don't feel good when I eat. If I have a few bites of wheat, of modern wheat, I don't feel well. So I didn't have any. I did admire them, though. We didn't get near a cream puff. My friend wanted, we were thinking we were going to get one. And Rob said, you're going to eat the cream puff. I said, no, I'm not. I'll taste some of the cream, but I'm not eating the cake. And I said, if you get a cream puff, I'll have some of your cream. And we actually didn't wind up doing that. But they have deep fried Oreos, and they have a crazy burger, which is a hamburger on a donut. Just really insane things. And there were many, many places to get kettle corn. I tried some kettle corn, but it wasn't that great. I have a local brand here that I like, that I prefer. So when I see them, that's what I usually get. But this kettle corn was a little light, a little on the light side. It's like if you go to the store and you get the skinny kettle corn, that's what it was like. So it was very interesting. So, I mean, and we walked around and saw all kinds of stuff. You know, they have hot tubs, and they have a midway, and they have all kinds of stuff to buy. People have crafted signs you can make, and people have all kinds of inexpensive jewelry and expensive jewelry. You could buy alpaca blankets. There were people trying to hard sell you all kinds of stuff, whether it was Chinese massage. There was Chinese massage guys. A guy would run out and he'd start rubbing your shoulder and say, come on, come on, come on. And Rob didn't want to do it, so he didn't do it. That was a little disappointing because I would have done it. But that's okay. You know, they had import stores that had skirts. I got skirts. I like skirts. So I got those. So they had a guy trying to sell me an anti-aging serum for my eyes. And he was a nice guy from Israel who was really cute, too. His name was Eden. And I didn't get the stuff, which I think he was disappointed about. But that's okay. So it was a really fun time. I really enjoyed it. I'd never been to the Big E. This is the 100th Big E. And if you want to go, it's 3 weeks long, so it'll be into next week and the week after. So you have some time to go. It's probably better to go during the week because I don't know if it's cheaper, but it's also less crowded. We lucked out on Monday because it was kind of a rainy day, but not too rainy, so it wasn't very busy. So it was really great. We didn't have to wait in a lot of lines. So that's what happened. I went to the Big E, and it was pretty exciting. All right. So we actually have a question. So Kathy writes in and she wants to know about she wants to know if she's wasting her money on black cohosh for hot flashes. And I must be sympathizing with her because I'm getting kind of hot at the moment. Oh, this happened at the Big E. So we looked at lots of animals, and we went to look at the Clydesdales. And when we went to look at the Clydesdales, I happened to see a very nice woman there, and she had a hand fan, and she was fanning herself. And I said to her, that's really great that you have a fan. She said, oh, hot flashes. So I got near her. So as she fanned herself, I was getting in on the action. So she was super friendly. So we started chatting about hot flashes. And she got pretty personable at telling me about her health history, which was perfectly fine. And she told me that she had had uterine fibroids and she had had a hysterectomy. And after having the hysterectomy, she felt much, much better. And that was really interesting that she had a lot of discomfort. And I think her, I'm not sure if her hot flashes were worse, but she had a lot of physical discomfort. And when, of course, she would, because, you know, she had a, when you talk about uterine fibroids, you talk about the size of the uterus and you compare it to how many weeks pregnant the woman would be if it was full of baby instead of fibroids. And she was like 22 weeks. It was big. It was 16 to 22 weeks. It was a lot, you know. And some women with uterine fibroids, they can get really big. Uterine fibroids are growths of muscle tissue. They can be on the outside of your uterus. They can be inside the muscle, and they can be on the surface of the endometrium, the lining of your uterus. And if they're on the lining, they can be a real pain because they bleed. You know, they have tissue, they have endometrium on them. And so because they're big, you get more bleeding during your periods. And so some women, if they're too big and they can't fix them any other way, they can't get an ablation where they cauterize the blood vessels so that you don't bleed so much. If that doesn't work, some women wind up having to get a hysterectomy. So this woman she felt much better without her uterus, but she did have the hot flashes, and she was really into the fan, and she was giving me tips on where to find the fans. I did see a lady selling fans, but I was advised, why don't you go look for some other ones? So I did. And I picked up a fan because that wasn't all that was at the stand. And I picked it up and I started fanning myself. And there was an older lady sitting at the booth there. And she said, "Are we flashing?" I said, "You know it." So it's funny because when you get to be this age, you're in the sisterhood. Everybody knows what you're doing and they know how you feel. It's kind of fun. It's not so much fun to flash, but what are you going to do? So anyway, is Kathy wasting her money on black cohosh? Well, she is if it doesn't work. Depending on the brand. So the problem is you have to get the right brand, a brand that actually works. The nice thing about black cohosh for hot flashes is that it is not estrogenic. That's not how it works. It's an anti-inflammatory, but it does have an effect on hot flashes, and I think it calms you down. So it takes away some of those vasomotor symptoms, which the hot flashes are. But it doesn't work by accessing estrogen. So it's safe for women who have reproductive issues. So if you have uterine fibroids, you have ovarian cysts, or if you've had a reproductive cancer, and if you're on a drug, so say you've had breast cancer and you're on anastrozole or letrozole or tamoxifen, you can use black cohosh for your resultant hot flashes because it isn't estrogenic. So is she wasting her money? She's only wasting her money if she's bought a certain kind of black cohosh that doesn't work. So you have to experiment and you have to see if a good brand, you have to experiment with different brands and, you know, get a good brand if you can. It's a good idea to get them from a practitioner, from a reputable place, a reputable health food store with a really good brand. You can try extracts because you can get the triterpenoids extracted. So it's a standardized extract of black cohosh. And that may work better for you, or whole plant may work better for you. Tea may work better for you. Tincture. I like tincture. The thing about tincture is that when you extract herbs in alcohol, you get more constituents. So taking the tincture might be a good way to go. It all depends. There are concentrates that you can buy that are very easy to take. There's one called Remifemin, which is, you can chew it. It's even flavored with mint. It's very pleasant. And that works for some women. Some women use that and it's just fine. So it depends. The thing is, you have to pick and choose. And for me, when I started getting them in earnest, it was earlier in the year, and they've gotten better over the course of the year. But I still get them sometimes, and I still sweat at night sometimes. So I like to take evening primrose oil. Evening primrose oil, I think, is really great. Some women take evening primrose oil; really works for them. And then some women use black cohosh, and you might have to try a few things and try a few things together. Black cohosh, evening primrose oil, vitamin E, get vitamin E with mixed tocopherols, and you have to play with the dose on that one. Some women can use a low dose and some women, have to use, a high dose. And you should consult with your practitioner on this one, but you can go up to, you know, their doses have been recommended as high as 1600 IU of vitamin E, and that can help. Hesperidin, again, and all of these things, like I said, they're not phytoestrogens. That's not how they work. But vitamin E will calm estrogen receptors without stimulating them. So it's fine to use. And again, these are all, everything I've said so far, you can use safely, even if you have high estrogen issue or have had a reproductive cancer. And hesperidin is a bioflavonoid that's similar to vitamin E, and that can help also. So it can be really nice. And so you may have to make yourself a cocktail. There are certain herbs that can help. Black cohosh, we already said. Now soy, there's controversy about soy. Some people do well with soy, some don't. If you can't digest soy, it's not a good idea to eat it, so don't. But having a glass of soy milk before bed, for some people, that can be really helpful. And I was reading up to see if it's dangerous for women with reproductive cancers to consume soy milk. And the thinking was, if you have a glass of soy milk a day, it's not a big deal. If you're concerned about that, don't. However, a glass a day is probably not going to stimulate your estrogen receptors enough to make any sort of a difference, but it will stimulate them enough to make you more comfortable. And it may. It's something to try. I actually bought soy milk. One of my issues is that if you look at the Diadamo blood type diet stuff, which I use to an extent because I am a classic blood type A, and the blood type A do best as a vegetarian, although I'm not a complete vegetarian. I have to eat, when I eat animal protein, it has to be small amounts, but I do very well eating a mostly vegetarian diet with animal protein as an accent. And I found that, and when I eat soy, I feel good. I digest it just fine. I have no problem with it. If I overdo it, it will overstimulate my estrogen receptors. Like if I have soy milk with a soy protein shake, that's too much. But if I have a glass of soy milk, I feel just fine. If I have tempeh or if I have tofu in a stir fry, no problem. So in terms of hot flashes, you really have to figure out what works for you. And I also think that stress will aggravate your hot flashes because you're directing your hormones to go to cortisol. Your estrogen, progesterone are going to get converted to cortisol to run your fight or flight, so you don't have as much around, so you're going to get more hot flashes. So the calmer you are, the less hot flashes you may have. But then there's the sleep thing. And the sleep thing is annoying because your sleep can get interrupted anyway, even if you're not sweating, and then it can be interrupted by being hot. Good times, dude, let me tell you. And so that's where the soy milk at night comes in. That's where and sometimes you can use serotonin agonists. So St. John's wort or 5-hydroxytryptophan can help there if you're waking up a lot at night. And, you know, they give women fluoxetine, which is the same drug as the brand name Prozac, but there's a drug, I don't know if it's still sold, there's a drug Serafem, which is the same drug. It's just sold to help women with hot flashes, but it's the exact same drug. So, and it's a serotonin selective reuptake inhibitor, and you can use 5-HTP. 5-HTP is a precursor to serotonin. So one blocks the reuptake of that neurotransmitter, and the other one helps you make more of it. So the 5-HTP is something you can get over the counter, whereas the fluoxetine is something you get prescribed to you. So I also feel like getting exercise, that if I get a lot of sweaty exercise, that I have a better time with my hot flashes, probably because it levels out my cortisol. So on a day that I've exercised a lot, I'm going to be less likely to get hot flashes. On a day that I've exercised a little and then gone to work, I'm going to be likely to get more. Today I have I did exercise. I did weights for half an hour, but I'm sitting here. So I'm getting excited, so I'm more likely to get a little sweaty. And I know I can, not quite, but I can think myself into a hot flash. Like, oh, I'm not having one. Oh, yes, I am. And women will tell you that they can do that. It's good times. What can I tell you? So I hope that's helpful. So in answer to Kathy, you know you're not wasting your money. If it works, you may have to try different forms of black cohosh, and there's other things that you can try. We can help to sort that out, and it's different for everyone. You know, I also think that eating too much sugar, if you're not eating well, if you're eating too much starches and sugars, if you drink too much alcohol, those are going to affect your hormones as well. If you eat a lot of protein and produce, mostly produce, that's going to help because produce has a lot of phytoestrogens in it and phytonutrients that are going to keep you more level. Produce also has fiber in it, which is going to help your gut flora to be more healthful, and it's going to help to manage your hormones better. Yeah. All right. So please keep those questions coming. You can write us at radionaturopath@gmail.com. You can also text me at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. We would love to hear from you. All right. So what else do you want to hear about? Before it gets away from me, let's talk about beet juice because I'm a fan. So one of the menopausal symptoms that you get is palpitations, and that's not uncommon. And I'm lucky enough to be one of those people. Why? Because one of the things is that estrogen keeps things soft and supple and growing and regenerating. And when you don't have the estrogen around, things can tend to get stiffer and harder. And that's why, you know, when you go to menopause, you get more joint pain, back pain. And, you know, you tend to, when you exercise, you might be more sore afterwards. And you might need to do more stuff to recover. and reduce inflammation and roll your back out, get massage, all that kind of stuff. So that's one thing that happens. Well, the muscles in your blood vessels are no different. So you have to do extra stuff to keep them supple. So one of the things that happens is women find that their blood pressure goes up, and also that they can get palpitations, that they, even if their blood pressure doesn't go up, they have an awareness of their heart beating. And it's not comfortable. And it's especially not comfortable when it happens when you're trying to sleep. So sleep becomes an issue. So the thing is, you're more tired because you have less hormones, but it's harder to sleep. Who thought this up? I do not understand this. It's amazing. Where sleep is my, it's my drug of choice. It's how I heal. And if I can just get to sleep, if I'm not feeling well, all I need to do is lie down, and that usually fixes a lot of stuff. If I can't sleep, that's bad, and you're less likely to be able to sleep. So I'm finding I have to really watch my caffeine. I can't have too much caffeine, especially late in the day, because it's more likely to keep me up, and I'll get those palpitations even worse. So one of the things that can help with the palpitations, one of them is motherwort. Motherwort herb, that can be really helpful. Linden herb can help. Yarrow can also help. Those are great herbs that can be helpful. But also, my new favorite thing is beets and beet juice. So if you want to adjust your blood pressure, whether you're male or female, menopausal or not, blood pressure can be helped. And it's a good idea to drink beet juice. And it can lower it in a matter of hours. I know that if I have beet juice or beet powder in water, within the rest of that day, I will not have palpitations. It's really quite amazing. And beets have a lot of stuff in them that's really good. So I'm going to try to eat more beets, but I'm definitely going to have beet juice. I have beet powder around to make it really easy for myself because I'm on the go a lot. So I can't sit and juice beets. It's just not going to happen. So if I have the powder, I can pour the powder into some water and drink it. I have one beet product that has cherry in it also, which is a great bioflavonoid with lots of antioxidants in it. So I have a little tiny scoop and I put it in maybe 4 ounces of water. I shake it up and I drink it. And I think it tastes pretty good. This particular product has some stevia and it has the cherry in it. So it tastes less beety, but I do not mind the flavor of beets. I mean, I'll eat raw beets grated into my salad, and I'll eat steamed beets, no problem. And pickled beets are very good too. You can buy beet juice at the health food store and online. I found beet juice at the Willie Co-op and I bought some. I haven't cracked it simply because I've been running around and I've been using the powder that I have. And the powder's really not hard to find. You may be able to find it at your health food store. You can definitely find it online. And so it can lower your blood pressure. One study found that drinking one glass of beet juice lowered systolic blood pressure by an average of 4 to 5 points, which if you have very high blood pressure, it's not going to make that much difference. But if you are borderline, it could put you into the normal range. It's very nice. And so one glass is going to probably be 8 ounces. And that likely comes from the naturally occurring nitrates in beets, which are not the bad guys that are in your bacon. They're nitrates that are converted to nitric oxide in your body, which relaxes and dilates your blood vessels. And it improves your blood flow and it lowers your blood pressure. So if you're anxious and tense, your blood vessels tend to also get anxious and tense. And like I said, when you have that lower estrogen happening, your blood vessels will also tend to get anxious and tense just from that. So having the beet juice, it's helping me. So it's something that I'm pretty excited about, that I'm having at least 4 ounces a day, and I'll probably have 4 to 8 ounces a day. So there's more stuff that it does for you. It boosts your stamina. So if you're trying to get through a workout, you do a little beet juice before your workout. You're not supposed to drink the beet juice during the workout, I think because it lowers your blood pressure too much, and you want your body to be able to raise your systolic blood pressure so you can do what you need to do. That's why people who take blood pressure meds feel so bad when they're trying to work out. They can't push themselves into their exercising range because your blood pressure is supposed to go up, your systolic, the top number. There was a study. Those who drank beet juice prior to exercise were able to exercise for 16% longer. again, related to nitrates turning into nitric oxide, which may reduce the oxygen cost of low-intensity exercise and enhance tolerance to high-intensity exercise. So because you're making more nitric oxide, you have more oxygenation around. So your breathing becomes additive to the nitric oxide that is present. It's really cool. And then there's inflammation. So if it fights inflammation, it's going to also help your blood pressure, because one of the reasons you get high blood pressure is because you have inflammation in your blood vessels. So if it's fighting inflammation and then it's also relaxing your blood vessels and improving circulation, you're all set. So beets have betaine. I am not sure how to pronounce that. I like to say betaine because beta is, you know, from a beet. Anyway, it's a nutrient that helps protect cells, proteins, and enzymes from environmental stress. It's known to fight inflammation, protect internal organs, improve blood vessel risk factors, enhance performance, and prevent numerous chronic diseases. And so betaine in our diet has been associated with lower levels of inflammatory markers like C-reactive protein, which is something that you measure for inflammation, interleukin-6, which is another inflammatory compound. So interleukin-6 is something that you want to keep down when you have cancer, and also TNF-alpha, tumor necrosis factor alpha. So that's tumor necrosis factor alpha is an inflammatory marker that's higher in people with cancer and also in people with bad autoimmune diseases like inflammatory bowel disease, rheumatoid arthritis, or any of the other autoimmune diseases like lupus or scleroderma and those things. And so you can use beet juice without the nasty side effects that the drugs, like, you know, your TNF-alpha inhibitors, the ones that you get injections for from the rheumatologist, you know, all those drugs that end in mab, denosumab, or those are monoclonal antibodies. And, you know, your Humira, Stelara, your Humira, Stelara, there's a few other ones out there, Xtandi, those guys that are TNF-alpha inhibitors, and they, beets have this property in them without having all the associated side effects. It's not going to suppress your immune system like those other drugs do. And so then we go on to beets having anti-cancer properties. And so it's the phytonutrients. It has anthocyanins and it is red. And it's shown that beetroot extract reduced multi-organ tumor formations in various animal models when you give it in their drinking water. It's being used in treating human pancreatic, breast, and prostate cancer. So it's really good stuff. It's one of those, it's another one of those superfoods. What can I say? If you just eat a beet as a food instead of drinking the juice, has a lot of vitamin C. Well, the juice is going to have vitamin C too. But if you eat the actual beet, has fiber, essential minerals, has potassium, which is also calming, has manganese, which is good for your bones, liver, kidneys, and pancreas, and blood sugar regulation. And it's a cofactor for a lot of enzymes in your body. And beets also have folate in them. So, and the folate's going to be absorbable. So if you have an anomaly, if you have that MTHFR anomaly where you have a difficult time, we have a difficult time processing your folic acid, it's going to be absorbable from a beet. Yeah. So, and then detox support, the betalain pigments in beets support body's phase two detoxification process. So beets are a cholagogue and a choleretic. They will push toxins through your liver. So when you start drinking beet juice, if you drink a lot of it, you might not feel good right away because your body's going to be kicking through some toxins that it might have backed up. And I found that when I started drinking the beet juice, I didn't feel good for a while. And now I think I'm starting to tolerate. It's probably pushing junk out of me. So it's got a doctor and a signatures thing going on, because if you look at a beet, kind of looks like your heart, and it's the color of your blood, and it's a blood purifier and helps you to build more red blood cells. It's got a total doctor and a signatures thing going on, you know, where the food that you're eating looks like the thing that it's trying to treat. Kind of cool, huh? So it's a really great detoxification too. Beet greens. Don't forget to eat your beet greens. They're really good for you too. And they have a lot of nutrients, protein, phosphorus, zinc, fiber, B6, magnesium, potassium, copper, manganese, and then it also has A, C, calcium, and iron. If it doesn't really have vitamin A, it has beta carotene in it. And it's going to have other carotenoids because it's a leaf. And beets actually have more, and beet greens have more iron than spinach. And so if you have anemia, beets are your friend. And beet greens can help ward off, help build your bone strength and fight Alzheimer's. And again, strengthen your immune system, and it can help you produce antibodies. So, you know, beet greens can be sauteed. You can do that neat thing where you mush them up, with oil and a little bit of good quality salt, and put some, you can put some, a little bit of molasses and have a salad that way. There's a lot of ways to do it. You can make borscht if you want to. I think borscht is delicious. Not everybody's going to like borscht, but I do. I mean, I grew up eating borscht because, you know, my family's from Eastern Europe. And borscht can be quite delicious. And you can make it principally with beets, and you can make it with beets and tomato. And it's really good. And it's very refreshing. I had a soup that had beets and raspberries in it, and they really complemented each other. And this, this powder that I have has beets and cherries in it. So that was interesting. So you can get recipes online for beets. Beets can be steamed, and you can season them how you like, or you can just eat them steamed. They have a lot of flavor. You can eat them pickled. You can make borscht. If you're lazy like we are, you can take a raw beet and you can grate it over your salad and just eat it raw. And that's fine too, as long as you digest them well. They're really nice. Borscht is really lovely, especially, you know, as the season is moving along and it's getting cooler. It's a nice root vegetable that you can have. Really delicious. So, and you can season it. This recipe calls for, you can add a little cabbage, you can put in parsley, nutmeg, you can even put in a little wine. You want to put in onions. It wouldn't be Eastern European if it wasn't onions. It could be really nice. And there are different borscht recipes that you can get. I bet you can find a curried borscht if that's your thing. There's a lot of ways to enjoy them. So I'm all about the beet. And I embarrassed a little girl at the farmer's market by starting to sing, "We got the beet." So there's like beet jokes you can make. The Beatles, you know, you can, the Beatles can be either, you know, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, in beet red, could be, you know, you can have a little bug that looks like a beet. There's your Beatles. And there's Michael Jackson's favorite song, which is really about lowering your blood pressure, called Beat It. Yes. And so, if you've got the beet, you could be a lot healthier. It's a nice thing. I'm all about the beet. And then there's Meghan Trainor's great song. I'm all about that beet, No trouble. Right? Okay. You'll have less trouble if you have more beets. Yeah. So let's see. We've got about 11 minutes left before Bicycle Talk. So that's exciting. So here's another thing. So you know that I've been noticing that I'm stressed, and you know I'm going through menopause. So I'm noticing that. And certainly there are people listening who have stress. I can't imagine that could be the case, since I'm not sure who doesn't have stress. Maybe there are some people who don't, that live a life where their stress is minimal. That would not be me. If you're in a place where you're anything below very wealthy, and even very wealthy people, if they're very busy, they're still stressed. I'm sure as obnoxious as Donald Trump is, he's stressed. And so obviously so is Hillary Clinton. Poor thing. She had pneumonia last week. And so I've been trying to find little ways to reduce my stress, because I can't just pick up and go visit my parents in Florida any old time, although I will be doing that in a couple of weeks. I have to incorporate stress reducers into my life. So one of the things that I did was I started listening to Caribbean music. I started listening to the Jimmy Buffett channel on Sirius. I started listening to more Caribbean music. I started wearing more colors from the Caribbean. I started listening to more reggae. And I found that, you know, I wasn't so much of a reggae fan, but I find that reggae is very relaxing. And so is that, you know, Caribbean Margaritaville kind of sound. It's actually pleasant and relaxing. And if I'm in the right mood for it, it calms me down. So you don't have to listen to that music, but if there is a thing that calms you down, if you can't get away to the beach or the mountains or the woods, whatever your happy place is, you can bring some of that into your life. You can get sounds to play that come from those places. So if you're a woods person, you can get soundscapes that you can listen to on your device, whatever that is, on your computer or your people don't have iPods so much anymore because they just listen on their phone. The phone has a lot of storage. So you can listen to wood sounds in your phone if that's your thing. Or you can listen to any kind of music that calms you. And you could do that any time of the day. If you're in a situation where you can listen to music, you can do that. And it might remind you of a more peaceful, calmer time. And it can help to calm you down in the moment. And I'm trying to make sure I'm eating produce, that I'm eating fruit and I'm eating vegetables, because not just because I know they're healthy for me, but because they remind me of being of the warm time of year and places in the world where it is warm. I'm starting to fantasize about going to the Caribbean because I've never been. Although, you know, I could go to the Gulf anytime. You know, I have a place down there. Just finding ways to, little hacks that are stress reducers, maybe a few minutes of a few stretches, a few minutes of sitting in my chair, closing my eyes. I went and I bought a new chair at Staples, one that's more comfortable for me because I hadn't bought a chair in many, many years. And this chair is so comfortable, I could take a nap in it. Taking a nap, this is a good thing. Just closing my eyes for a few minutes can be a real stress reducer. So I'm just trying to find little things in that way. And I really found it's quite amazing that because I know the reason that I'm listening to that Caribbean style music is to help to bring down my stress, it triggers me to do that, which is very nice. So just these little hacks. If you have a desk space where you work, you can put up photos of things that calm you down, places in nature that you enjoy, times in your life that you enjoy, family times or people that you love. Just set up your desk so that it has little reminders of peaceful stuff that you can just look at, that if you're in the middle of a very stressful situation, you can look at it and it can help to calm you down. So that's a nice thing. Just remember that in reducing stress, leisure walks in nature really help. So being able to get outside any time of year is really helpful. Now, I have my limits. If it's super cold, I'm probably not going to be out there. If it's super cold and super windy, or there's some kind of precipitation that's really intense, I'm probably not going to be going down there. But But most times of year, there's some kind of garb that I can put on that's going to get me outside. And then if I can be in nature, it's really it really helps to calm me down. So that's really nice. So not too long ago, I had a lady come in who had a rash, and I started to talk to her about how it could be poison ivy or poison sumac, but then I looked at the rash and I learned that you should just look at the rash before you start talking, because I'm pretty good at identifying rashes. So thanks to my teachers at the National University of Natural Medicine. It was National College of Naturopathic Medicine back then. I had very good dermatology training, so they taught us very good recognition of rashes. So I took a long look at a rash and I said, "You've prickly heat." She said, "What's prickly heat?" So I told her what prickly heat was, and I laughed, and she said, she wanted to know why that was amusing. I said, "Because it's very non-serious. You're not going to die. You're not even sick. You don't have a virus. You have prickly heat. It's okay. You're going to be fine." That's why. So it's like you have a condition that's not a big deal and we can fix it. So that's why I was happy. So I asked her to show me. How did I know it was prickly heat? Well, prickly heat can look like a big, angry red papular rash. It's lots of pinpoints. It looks like it can look like measles gone awry. But how you know it's prickly heat is because it's not on exposed surfaces. So it wasn't on her lower body because she had been hiking and she had been wearing wicking fabric. And the wicking fabric took care of it. She did not get the prickly heat there. On the part of her body where she's wearing a cotton shirt, that's where she got the prickly heat. So if you tend to get prickly heat, you may not want to exercise in cotton. You're going to have to wear a wicking technical fabric. So what happened to her? She got really sweaty, and the bacteria that was naturally on her skin went yum yum and ate her sweat glands and inflamed them. That's all prickly heat is. So the cool thing is, you can go to the drugstore and get facial toner. And the facial toner should have a number of ingredients in it. It will have a little bit of alcohol. And I know you're not supposed to put alcohol on your skin too much, but you're only going to be doing this for probably less than a week. So it's not a big deal. So it's going to have some denatured alcohol in it. It's going to have camphor. And the camphor is going to feel really good because camphor, when it touches your skin, it gets cold. You feel cold because it evaporates really quickly. So that cold sensation, if you have a hot rash, feels a lot nicer. So it's got camphor, and this product had eugenol, which is an extract of cinnamon and cloves. And it had some tea tree oil in it, and a couple of other essential oils in it. But the camphor was the big one. It had menthol in it, which, again, is going to be cooling. So it had a bunch of essential oils and witch hazel, of course. You can use plain witch hazel, but if you want it, so if you don't want to buy the drugstore variety and you have the essential oils around, what I'd recommend is mixing up your own, and you can get witch hazel. Just buy plain witch hazel at the store and then add to that a few drops of you don't have to use straight up camphor. I probably wouldn't recommend buying camphor, but you can use tea tree oil, which is going to have camphorols in it. So use tea tree oil, eucalyptus, thyme oil would be a great one to throw in. You might not want to use cinnamon oil because that would be a little irritating, but definitely thyme, eucalyptus, tea tree. If you have red cedar oil, thuya oil, that'd be a good one to put in there too. And so you put a few drops into the witch hazel, and then you use a cotton ball, and you just wash off the areas that have the rash, and do that two or three times a day, and then you can purchase or create, if you wish, powder. You don't get baby powder that has talc in it. You get a powder that is clay based, and there's a powder that you can get that I like that's a foot powder. And don't worry that it's a foot powder, it doesn't matter. It's not going to matter if you put it on your torso rather than your feet. So it has bentonite clay in it, and then it has a bunch of essential oils, including tea tree, lavender, and a bunch of these other essential oils in it. And so after you apply the toner, which is going to really spread around the essential oils to kill the bacteria, you let yourself air dry. And once you're dry, then you powder yourself up and then you get dressed. And so that's really nice. And then, you're probably going to be well from this. The rash is going to go away in short order. In less than a week, you're probably going to be a lot better. And so now you have this stuff. And if it happens again, you could use it again. And if you have the foot powder, now you have nice foot powder. And you can, in fact, put that in your shoes. The foot powder that I like from the health food store has all these essential oils in it. A little goes a long way. You can put it in your shoes and they'll keep away the yucky, moldy feet. So, all right. So that has been Radio Naturopath on Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. It's been lovely sitting here with you here at the University of Connecticut. You have been listening to 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors. And we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath. And we'll have a special guest, Michelle Allison, who will talk about issues about the trans community. All right. So back next week.